Thank you for listening to this message from Northwest Hills Community Church in Corvallis, Oregon. You can learn more about our church at nwhills.com. Today, Youth Pastor Gary Jones continues our 10-week series on the life of David. In 1 Samuel 17, we read the epic story of the duel between David and the Philistine champion Goliath. Though Goliath was mighty, David triumphed over him because he had faith that God would be on his side in the midst of the battle. Likewise, God calls us to step out in faith and trust, placing our lives fully into his care. Also, as part of the Something to Say series, we'll start the message with a testimony from Kylie Peterson, who used to be an intern here at Northwest Hills. We hope you find it encouraging. Now, here's today's message.
Hi, I'm Kylie Peterson. You might recognize me from doing the worship internship last year here at Northwest Hills. I went here for a couple years. I moved here for college and started going here right away. And now me and my husband live in Kings Valley. So a little bit of my background. I didn't grow up in a house where we talked about God or religion or anything. I was not in a Christian household. We had gone to a Catholic church when I was very, very young for a couple years, but after that, it was never really a topic of discussion. The first time I went to a Christian church or really heard anything about Jesus was when I was in college, and some of my friends who were Christian were trying to find a church, and I really just wanted to make friends and hang out with people, and so I followed along, and I was like, okay, this might be interesting. And after I had started going to church for a while with my friends, I just became more and more curious. There was a club on my campus called Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and I was playing lacrosse at that time for the school, and I got invited to that, and so I was like, okay, here's a way for me to make friends. I ended up joining a Bible study, which I was terrified because I didn't know what that meant, or I'd never really read the Bible, but I thought it would be a cool place to just hear what people had to say, and it was comfortable and safe. And so soon, I started to see Jesus moving in my own life and really truly believe in the ways that he could change me for the better. One of my struggles that I've always had growing up was, I guess two of them are people-pleasing and trying to control every situation. Finally, I realized that the pull I was feeling to control my life so much and please everyone was much less important than that pull that I was feeling to follow Jesus. One clear example of me having to give up that control to Jesus was my move to Oregon. I was just graduating from my undergrad in Colorado and didn't really have a next step, and a master's program at Oregon State presented itself. It sounded really scary, and I had never really thought of moving to Oregon, but it seemed like where I was being pulled, and it seemed like that door was opening, and so as scary as it was, I decided to jump on that call and move, and it ended up becoming so much more than just being about school, which is what I had anticipated it being about. But I ended up getting plugged into Northwest Hills, which became an amazing experience. And I got to learn how to serve the Lord through worship in so many more ways than I could have imagined. I ended up meeting my now husband at Northwest Hills. And so that was definitely a big life step that I wasn't anticipating happening coming to Oregon. And so it felt like school was almost the last thing that came out of this move, which just shows how much I needed to stop trying to control what was happening, because I got these other amazing things when I finally gave up that control to Jesus. If you feel like you're someone who is constantly trying to meet people's expectations or just wants to have control over your life fully, I would really encourage you to just take a leap of faith and put your full trust in God to have that control. It might feel really hard, or there might be some difficulties that come up when you are giving that control to God, but God has an amazing plan for you, and the only way to truly see that is to give up that control to Him. And once you do that, the outcome will be so much greater than you could have ever anticipated.
Oh yeah, thank you, Kylie. Thank you, Kylie, for sharing your story with us. Man, that girl's got something to say. And something that someone said to me in between services was, This is not in the biblical text, so take this or leave it, but they said, come on, man, David had to have somebody in his corner cheering him on, telling him he could do it with the battle against Goliath. And I was like, I looked at him and was like, I read a lot of commentaries, and I didn't see anything like that. And I walked off, I walked away and everything else, and then I came back to him and was like, dude, it was a youth pastor. I bet it was a youth pastor. So I'm Gary Jones, I'm the youth pastor. And again, that is not biblical, but here we are. Is there any parents in the room? How about parents of small children? Woo, my heroes out here right now dealing with the sleepless nights. How about if you've ever been a small child? Okay, we took care of everybody. Yeah, I got a small child. I got two small children. I got a picture of them up here. Lou is 5 years old and Millie is 1 year old. And there they are. Aw, you kind of need to get ready here. So I love talking to Lou about the Bible, and I was talking to her about, what's your favorite story in the Bible? And she said, first thing that she said, I was really hoping she'd say David and Goliath, and she said, I just really love in the end when we all get together with God in heaven. I was like, oh, man, that is the best answer you could have. And so I was like, all right, what's next? And she said, well, Noah's Ark. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a tough story, but there's a promise, and I could see how you'd like it. There's a lot of animals. I was like, what else you got for me? And she's like, David and Goliath. She knows I'm like looking, fishing for an answer. And so I said, hey, tell me about the story of David and Goliath. What do you know about it? And she says, well, God chooses David as king. It's like, oh, that's pretty good. Yep. What else? And she said, what was the second thing she said? She said, he ran to fight the mean guy. She knew that he ran. And we call him the mean guy. That's what it says in the storybook Bible. And I said, yep, that's right. And then I said, what else? And she said, God's power made the rock hit him in the head. And I was like, man, this kid is smart. How did you know that? And so I asked her, how did you know that? And you know what this kid said? I saw the movie. Like, apparently it's not just the book. They made a movie about it. So life with small children. The kid's always got something to say. And as Mark said, that's our theme for the year. Something to say. Jesus changes everything, so we have something to say. I'm super stoked this morning for what God's going to do and say to us through 1 Samuel 17, the story of David and Goliath. And I'm with my daughter. It's got to be top three. It's epic. It's awesome. And it follows the story from last week that Pastor Josh kicked us off in this series with, where he talks about how David's faithful in all these different areas. He's faithful in waiting, in terror, in chaos, in victories, in failures. He was a faithful guy. And today we get a close-up view of what God has to say to us through his faithfulness. And a question for you, a real question for you this morning is, where do you need God to show up in your life? And maybe you're coming here and you're not even looking for God. I met a guy this week that asked me the question. I don't know how many times I've been asked this, but he said, okay, so you're a Christian. So what's that mean? Like, what are the things that you do? And I was like, oh, that's a really great question. Maybe you're here this morning and you're just getting by. And I think there's a ton of people in culture right now like that. They're so busy. They're so maxed out. They can't even stop to slow down to think, to ask the question, man, where do I need God to show up? Or maybe you're a seasoned saint and you're in here and you've been waiting for God to show up in a big area, in a big way for a long time. And no matter the case, God's going to say something. The Israelites in this story, they were people that were busy chasing the wrong things. And they were chasing something other than what God had for them, which we dove into. They were so desperate, last week we talked about, for a king that they begged God. And finally, he gave them what they wanted, but he gave them the king that they deserved. And we read about Saul and how he was handsome and tall, head and shoulders above the rest, which as we're reading this story, think about that with Goliath. Here's their champion. And Saul is a king, head and shoulders above the rest of the Israelites, but what's he doing? He's running scared. So keep that in your mind. When things get stressful, he disobeys God. In last chapter, we see how David is anointed the new king of Israel, and he's given the Spirit of the Lord, and he returns to go back to his job. He's watching the sheep for his dad. He's a musician for Saul when Saul has his mental breakdowns to comfort him. And before we even open up chapter 17, we notice something. There's a difference in appearances here. The people wanted a king who looked like a king, tall and strong, and could lead them into battle. One of the main roles in a king that day. But what did David look like? He was an unlikely choice. He was a shepherd. He was lowly. He was a musician. He was the youngest of a bunch of brothers. Even Samuel, God's prophet, when he saw the older brother, said, "That's got to be the one. He's tall, he looks like a king." To which God responded in chapter 16, verse 7, "Do not look on his appearance, on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees." And here's the famous line, "Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." And then we get to chapter 17. What's the scene here? The Israelites are gathered in battle against the Philistines, and they're in this valley of Elah, and it's about 2 to 3 miles wide, and you got the Philistines on one side camped out, and you got the Israelites on the other side, and they're drawn up, and out comes a Philistine, a champion. In verse 4, it says a very vivid description about this champion. You don't get, there's a lot of battles in the Bible, and you don't get very many descriptions about a person that are as vivid as this. Look what it says. "And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs, and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him." Look at this picture. This guy is huge. He's mean, and he's strong, and he's 9 feet tall, or over 9 feet tall. He's got armor weighing 125 pounds. I mean, this is a dude that makes Shaq look tiny. He's got a shield bearer carrying a shield twice as big as what you'd normally have, so he's fortified. And the whole deal about the weaver's beam, it was a spear that had a loop at the end of it, and it had cords tied on it and wrapped around it so he could throw it farther and more accurate, making him even more powerful in battle. And so the writer here is really keen to show this guy would be impossible to beat. Hold on, though. This is messed up. Didn't we just read that God's not concerned with appearances? The writer knows what they're doing. The next thing that they write is say, "Look at this guy's outward appearances." And so would you guys stand with me as we read the next section and honor God as we read his word? We're going to read verses 8 through 11, and then we're going to skip down to 45 through 47. It's on page 239 in your church Bible. This is what God's word says. Verse number 8 is about Goliath. "He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, 'Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us.' And the Philistine said, 'I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together.' When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid." Now skip down to verse 45. David's audacious response to the giant. "Then David said to the Philistine, 'You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may have a seat. Woo! We're not having fun. Mark said we're partying. We're doing battle this morning. Man, if you read, if you want a passage that fires you up of a little biblical smack talk, this is the one. You got to take note of what David says here, and it's our first point. Write this down if you're taking notes. It's God who fights our battles and gives victory. I'll say it again. It's God who fights our battles and gives victory. You see, the problem before we even get started here with this story is before we even have David facing Goliath, they wanted a king to fight battles for him, and that was a problem because that's a job that God wanted for himself. He wanted the people to look weak so that he could look strong. You don't need a king, you have me. And when Samuel's sad because they chose a king against God in chapter 8, God says back to Samuel, it's not you they have rejected, but they've rejected me as their king. So now they got a second problem. They're full of fear in the face of this impossible to beat giant. And why is that? Because now they're forgetting who God is and who they are, that they're his people. Listen to what Moses says to Joshua in Deuteronomy 31, 7 through 8. Be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. And what's Israel doing right here? They're afraid and they're dismayed. JJ, that could be a punk rock album, wherever you are. They're freaking out because they're not believing their identity of God's people. They're not remembering the stories of what's happened when God let them cross the Red Sea, when God took down the walls of Jericho, when God went before. He didn't need them to be mighty because he's mighty. And again, both these problems go down to their identity, who they are and who they belong to. And man, when I read this part of the story, it would be great if I didn't relate to it, but I'm just like them. And there's times, and I know there's a lot of people in here like this too, where we are scared and we're afraid and we forget our identity as God's children. And on our bad days, we just need to remember that God is our Father, we're his child, and he's got us in our hands. That's kind of a good amen moment right there. I know I'm not the only person for that. And really, think about it. I need church every week. I need to be here every Sunday to be around God's people and see them and them see me and encourage each other and pray together. And I'm out here praying for people's lives that are being threatened to death. And we need this every week. I mean, this is what we came here for. So 40 days, Goliath taunts them and jeers morning and evening, it says. And so what's David do? He sends sends his son David out to check on the battle. He wants him to check on his brothers, take him provisions, and bring back a token or a word of what's happening. And so David goes out. He brings bread for his brothers. You see, even the details of this story about bread are showing that these people, David and the Israelites, they're a common people. It's like in the book of Ruth, you read about this parched grain that's prepared. It's a favorite food of simple people. And he brings cheese to the commanders. And what happens? David leaves it basically with the wagons, and he meets his brothers, and he's talking with them. And as he's talking with them, he hears the giant start to make his boasts. And while everyone else is afraid, you know what David is? He's angry. He's like, this is not right. This is messed up. And he asks in 26, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Read through the whole story. David never even uses his name. He is calling him out and saying, who is this nobody that thinks he can challenge my God? And he's righteously angry about that. And so we can notice a couple things about David in this story. Number one, he sees past the outer appearances to the way things that really are. Every single person there saw Goliath's physical structure. And I guarantee, as much as we want to be David in this story, you think if you're standing next to a man that's 9 feet tall and is built like a fortress and he's wearing all this armor and he's got the best weapons, you think anybody in this room is going to be like, I could take him? There's no way. We would be afraid, and David's angry. We see after that we get a little family drama. It's kind of fun. David's older brother is like, what are you doing over here anyway? And who's taking care of the sheep? And if anybody in the room's got an older brother, it's like, I feel that. I feel that remark. To my brother Carl, if you're watching, I love you, man. And then the funny part, and this is where it comes back, is David's response is like, hey, man, I was just asking a question. Sheesh. And then he goes and asks somebody else. He's like, hey, for real, though, what's up with this bad guy? You got to love family drama there. His brother says, your heart's full of evil. And really, David's heart wasn't full of evil. His heart was full of just faith for God and excitement of like, this is not what I'm going to stand for. This is not what my God is about. And his heart's full of courage that the other soldiers didn't have. And it's interesting, the other soldiers actually probably believed in God and knew the stories of what God did in the past, but they just didn't have faith in this moment that God would deliver them. And so we see a great contrast. So word gets around to Saul that David's asking these questions, and he sends for David. And David says to Saul in verse 32, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine and fight him. You're just a youth." And he's been a man of war from his youth. And I love David. He's such a scrapper. We're gonna keep studying the life of David here. He's a good back talker, man. He's got a lot to say, something to say back. And he says, no, no, no. He says, "I got a reason to believe." And so the second thing to notice, David's got a deep confidence in God, and it's one that leads him to act. In verse 34, David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it from his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he's defied the armies of the living God." He won't say his name, and he says the real flaw of Goliath. Man, he's not coming against us, dude. He's coming against God. And I love what the Christian author John Bloom comments. He says, "This reality about getting saved from these animals was David's courage wellspring. He wasn't self-confident. He was God-confident. David believed that God would never break his promise, and if Goliath made himself an obstacle to God's promise, God could flick him out of the way with a pebble. David saw God as bigger and stronger than the fearful Philistine, so he went out to fight knowing that God would give him the victory over Goliath. And when he did, the victory would demonstrate God's power and faithfulness, not David's courage." And man, I don't know if you're like me. You ever want to believe that God can do something? And so you're like, yeah, I'm with that. I'm for that. I like that promise. But then over here, you're kind of like, I'm going to keep something back. Like, this is just in case. This is my backup plan. Or I'm going to trust God, but I'm going to live in a little bit of this over here just in case things with him doesn't pan out for me. That's Saul's next line here. It's hilarious. He says, "The Lord be with you, but let me give you all my gear just in case things don't work out right so you'll be protected." And David says, "I can't go with these. They don't fit. I haven't tried running in them." And he takes his staff and he takes his five stones and he puts them in his shepherd's pouch with his sling in his hand, and he approaches the Philistine. In verse 41, "And the Philistine moved forward and came near David and his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, 'Am I a dog that you would come to me with sticks?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, 'Come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field.'" And it's interesting that he curses him by his gods, because if you read 1 Samuel chapter 5, you see the Philistine, the main Philistine god, Dagon. And he's in the temple, and they capture the Ark of the Covenant, and they put it in front of where God's presence dwells. They put it in front of the god. The next morning, the god's fallen on its face. And they're like, that's not good. So they set him back up. The morning after that, the god fell down, and his head and hands are cut off. And so as if Goliath's jaunt here is successful, David's response is, man, I'm going to throw these insults right back in your teeth. And it's what we read at the beginning of the service. David fires back and says, "You think sticks are nothing? Your spear, your sword, your shield, all your armor are nothing because I'm coming at you with God's power. I'll strike you down and cut off your head." And then he says so that all will know Israel has a real God. So everyone here will know God doesn't save with sword and spear. Again, the second part of verse 47 says, "For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." He had a faith full that God was going to fight his battle and win the victory. And the closest example I've ever came to this in real life of this exchange of smack talk, I went to Haiti 5 times after I graduated college. And when I was down there on one of the trips, there was Haiti has a few different religions. They have Catholicism, Christianity, they have voodoo. And there's just a lot of polytheism in Haiti. And one of the voodoo priests had a pastor moving into the neighborhood. And this guy loved Jesus, and he was out here changing lives and meeting people where they're at and preaching the gospel, and things were happening in the community. And it was taken away from the business of the voodoo priest. And he, with just angry hatred, said to this pastor, he said, "You see that spirit tree over there? I'm going to kill you and impale your body on that tree." And you know what the pastor responded with? He said, "Hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rip that tree out of the ground, roots and all, and plant a church right there." And he did. And the church still stands. And the pastor's respected in the community. You know why? Because God's power will not be overtaken by evil. And so David, he prevails over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. And he struck the Philistine and he killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David, verse 51. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his own sword, drew it out of his sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the end of the story goes, the Israelites chased them, and there's bodies everywhere. And David takes Goliath's head and armor, puts it in his tent, and the chapter ends with Saul asking three times, "Who's this young man? Who is this guy?" And so what's all this mean for us today? I'll give you a clue. We're not the hero in the story. Because the story David and Goliath is often misunderstood as a underdog story. And there's been books that have been written about it, and it says something like this. An unlikely hero used a weapon of war that he trained in, and so he, which was a sling, and so he rises up, he takes courage, and he takes down the giant in his life, and that's what you can do. You can take down the giant in front of you. And you know what the reality of this story actually tells us? The real giants we're actually faced with are our own sin and the spiritual battles that rage against us. And when we start to, like David, see things as they really are and realize the truths from Ephesians 6:12, that we aren't really battling flesh and blood, but against spiritual forces in the heavenly places. And it's in this battle we need a champion outside of ourselves. And at the beginning of chapter 17, when Goliath comes out and says, "Hey, send out your best guy, send out your champion," the Hebrew word for champion means the man of the in-betweens, or the man between two parties. And when David conquers Goliath, whose scaly armor actually should remind us, his armor was in plates, it was like scales. It should take us all the way back to Genesis 3 and remember, oh yeah, the serpent who deceived. And when we see his head cut off, we should think about the serpent's head is struck and crushed by Jesus. And the dragon in Revelation 12 that falls is reminiscent of these scales and this guy's armor. And Goliath represents evil and sin. And we see how David, not us, is the shadow of the one who's to come. God's anointed king who does for the people what they can't do for themselves. And he stands in their place and wins the victory. And David and Goliath, it's just not an underdog story, it's a faith story. After David gets a little shout out, you guys might know Hebrews 11, the Faith Hall of Fame, in verses, in all the verses before it says, by faith, and it lists a lot of people. And at the very end it said, yeah, if I had more time, I'd talk about David. Well, he's in there, he's got a little cameo. The first two verses of the next chapter say this, "Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses," David's an example of that, "let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." Man, if we keep our faith and our eyes fixed on Jesus, it'll help us walk in our faith today. And you're not alone. If there's a giant that you need to start trusting God with and his ability to fight for you, there's a whole room full of people that are looking to a better example, which is Jesus. And so the question, where do we need to see God show up in our lives? Man, all of us, first of all, we need to let Jesus take our sin away. He's the man in between, and we have to believe in him alone to be saved from what we could never save ourselves from. And the second thing, we need to put our confidence in him. When we see problems that are larger than us, we need to look to him who could do it. When we're faced with how weak and inadequate we are, we got to remember, nothing's too big for him to handle. There's no addiction, no pattern, no hurt, no problem in your life that's too big for God to handle. And a real life example, and I got so many of them. Yesterday, I was talking to a friend. He was actually one of the guys I've been to Haiti several times with. He's a pastor. His name's Pastor Tracy. He kind of reminds me of Ron. You know, he's always super upbeat. "Hey, Gary, how's it going?" He's just like the happiest guy. You just want to be around him. And on the phone, I said, "Hey, man, how's things going?" And we haven't talked in a few years probably. And he said, "Oh, they're going okay." And I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "Well, I just lost one of my granddaughters, one of my grandkids. they were going to be 1 year old. And I just started thinking about my daughter, Millie, and it became really real, you know, and I responded, and I said, that is so hard, man. That is a problem that seems too big to handle on your own. And the truth is, God's big enough to handle that giant, a giant like that we're faced with. When we're weak, he's strong, and he promises to be with us. And when we trust God with the difficult things in life, the great thing about him is God and his power is he gets the chance to show off his ability to fight and win the victory. You'll notice in the story, David doesn't take credit. He gives God the glory. And that's what this theme, Something to Say, is all about. It's about putting on display the way that God transforms lives through Jesus. And one of the coolest things about transformed lives is that we're invited into the battle. Like at the end of the story here, when the Israelites rally because the champion goes down, and you know, it's as if David's just saying, come on, and everybody rushes, and they're into the battle. That's what God invites us into once we know him. He says, do this battle with me. Be my co-laborers. Come on this mission with me. Preach the gospel. And I got tons of examples to share with this. I think there's just a lot of people in our church and community that are really out there in the word and practicing the disciplines and preaching Jesus to people and being light in dark places. And just one small example this morning, right now, she went to first service. Now she's leading youth, talking about missions, but it's a girl named Beth Witten. She was a college student here for several years, and she just graduated, and she said, you know what? I feel called by God to go to the Middle East, and I'm going. And man, you just want to talk about a super sweet time this past year in my life. It's been reading her prayer letters and praying them with my wife and with my daughters. And if you could read her prayer notes, I'm going to read a few specific phrases that this girl said. Every month, you'd hear these kind of prayers of faith, that God fights our battles. And listen to some of these. Pray that God would help me be bold in sharing faith. She's asking for things like strength, wisdom, endurance, words to share with people, energy, vision for their team. This was a specific quote. She said that I'd learn to trust more in his spirit every day. She's asking for discernment. She's asking for God to bring people to himself. She names them specifically. And for people to see Jesus as the solution rather than trying to work harder to earn God's favor. You guys are getting the picture. This isn't someone who is out here saying, I'm the hero, I can do this. She's saying, I'm totally reliant on God. I trust him that he's going to work, but I need him to meet me and fight my battle and bring the victory. And it's what David was, very much like her. She's a single woman. Now she's engaged, so congrats to her. Show up to church, you'll meet a great guy maybe. She's out here on the mission field, vulnerable, single girl, in a different culture with a language barrier, and just like David was vulnerable on the battlefield, and he goes out there with a sling and some stones, and it's got to be God's power that's at work. And if you're here this morning, you're wondering the answer to that question I ask, when is God going to show up? Jesus has already won the battle over Satan, sin, and death. And so there's an invitation for us this morning. There's an invitation for the person who doesn't know the truth about God and how he sent his son to be the man in between that could save us from our sin, the sin that we could never save ourselves from. We could never get away from it. And so he pays the price and he conquers the beast and he conquers sin. And there's an invitation for you to believe. And if you're a person here this morning that is a seasoned saint and you're a believer and you've been showing up, maybe your eyes have cast a little bit downward and you're looking down at your problems. We all do it. You got to raise your heavenly fix back up on Jesus and see that God is fighting for you right now and he wants to see you in the victory. He's already won the victory. And so I'm going to invite the band to come up and I'm going to pray for us in closing here. God, thank you so much for your truth, for your word, for how you speak, and how we're given not an example of how we can be a hero, but an example of great faith and dependence and trust on you, of a guy who says, God wins the battle, he's the one that fights, he brings victory. And God, whatever is in this room this morning that we need to lay down at the foot of the cross and say, Jesus, I just need you more. You've never left me. You'll never forsake me. And I just need you in my life in this giant area that I just can't overcome on my own. God, break into this space and change our lives. Help us to be transformed by the gospel, by the good news that you have victory. And God, when we read about David's life and all the suffering he goes through, we relate. And we need to know that you're near. So help us know you're near this morning and help people respond to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to today's teaching from Northwest Hills Community Church. We hope you find ways to apply the gospel to your life. And be sure to check out our website, nwhills.com, where you'll find ways to engage with us. And if you're able, we'd love to see you at church next Sunday. Thanks again for listening.